One of the things that we have been talking about is that that essentially has the potential to wipe out an entire kind of industry. There are a lot of people doing music for corporate events, for example, right? This is perfectly fine for a corporate event. If you think kind of some company is doing an event and the CEO comes in and needs kind of an upbeat sound to do that, that is perfectly fine. Welcome, everybody, to the March episode of our podcast, Spatial Audio Monthly. My name is Michael Wagner. I'm your host, and next to me is Sam Hawking.
Hello, everybody.
Now, this episode is going to be a little bit different, and there are a couple of reasons for that. First of all, this month there wasn't actually much going on in the space of spatial audio, and both Sam and I were actually quite busy with our day jobs. And in the preparation of this podcast, Sam suddenly asked me, hey, we talked a lot about what I was doing, but we never talked really about you, Michael. So today is a little bit about me and what I'm up to lately. And that also means that we're going to diverge a little into the field of generative artificial intelligence. And there will be an opportunity for people to vote on it. We will actually create a song today. At least that's the plan. We will see if that works. And we are going to ask the audience to kind of select what's the best song. And then we are going to kind of go from there. But once again, this is something we're going to talk about a little bit later. Let's maybe start as usual with the news. Sam, what is new this month?
Yeah, no doubt we've missed a few things due to being busy in the day jobs. But one thing that caught my eye was, it's kind of a rumor, but I think through somebody that might be beta testing the plugin, and that's, I heard the Audio Movers Apple Spatial kind of monitoring plugin is soon to have an option to also monitor the kind of Dolby Atmos binaural as well. So that'll include the binaural render modes.
That's cool.
I'm not sure whether that has to have the renderer, I guess not, because if you've got the renderer, there's no point using the plugin. So, I mean, although I suppose you'd have the renderer for the Apple Spatial as well. So I'm not sure what that is, or possibly somebody said maybe Apple will start using the metadata in their deliverable. But I'm not quite sure how that works when it's, at the moment, they deliver a DD plus jock, which doesn't have the metadata. So that's been a little bit of discussion in the Atmos community through the Audio Movers plugin. So,
well, that's quite interesting. There's probably some sort of API that Dolby provides, right? I mean,
definitely got an SDK. Also, that's how all the internal renderers are developed.
Exactly, right?
So I'm not sure if that's kind of parts of that can be used in the plugin. So it could be that. Yeah. But yeah, what is interesting that possibly Apple are looking at introducing the binaural render modes also, but hold your thoughts on that, because nothing's confirmed. It's just people gossiping. So.
Yeah, there are actually a couple of interesting things coming out. I also have beta access to something that I'm not allowed to talk about, but sort of there are, even though we didn't have much going on this month, there's actually something in the pipeline. So there are good things coming.
Yeah, no. I think that was the only thing that really caught my eye. I think there was the Audio Movers delay plugin last month, wasn't it? We already covered that.
That's a very good question. I don't think we talked about it. Is that sort of a spatial audio delay kind of thing?
I thought it was, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry for being vague, everybody. we had a massive power outage at work, and I work in IT, so it's basically I haven't thought about anything other than networks and servers and stuff.
And how to make sure that the network is up, right?
Yeah. It's all good. I think that you had something on the Ginger.
Well,
audio,
essentially, kind of that's something. Actually, we are recording this on a Saturday, and that was announced yesterday. Ginger Audio has this collaboration tool that allows you to collaborate. And the one thing that caught my eye was that it is surround sound capable, so it should be able to actually allow people to collaborate in Dolby Atmos. I have not had a chance to check that out yet. So I don't really know much about it. I also am not completely sure if it is something that you can use on Windows. The Ginger Audio stuff is really good, but that is usually only available for Mac operating systems. That's sort of what they do.
Yeah.
But it looks promising because at the moment, I don't think there are, I might be wrong. Sam, you might know that better than I do, but I don't think there are any collaboration tools out there that allow you to actually go full Dolby Atmos in remote collaboration. So essentially connecting two doors with one another and then kind
I think the Dolby Atmos mastering suite, I'm pretty sure that was kind of designed for collaboration because the mastering suite would do the rendering and then each Mac would have the renderer.
Yeah,
The Dolby Atmos renderer. This is the
old
production
one.
Suite. So the production suites would be the terminals.
But they didn't have like a video because the Ginger Audio thing has a video connection as well, right?
You can do multi-channel kind of sharing with various things on a bus and things like that, but actual Atmos collaboration, that would be quite cool. Not quite sure how it all mixes back together at the end.
I'm just guessing at that point. It's something that just kind of flew by my eyes like yesterday.
Right.
I have not yet had a chance to look at it. The only thing I kind of double checked is that it is surround sound capable. I'm honestly not sure how many channels. So I'm just assuming because Ginger Audio is known for their solution that actually is pretty much kind of trying to be as multi-channel as possible, that they are trying to do that. But once again, I haven't had a chance to test it yet.
Yeah, no, it's just an interesting, because you could essentially collaborate on the audio and then it kind of mixes in together through the renderer and then that's shared between you. Or it could do it on the other end where you kind of, it's two renderers at the same time and the whole output is mixed together and you kind of like mixing as if it's two records mixing almost, but two renderers. That could be quite cool.
So maybe we should have a closer look at that because that sounds like a cool first.
Hopefully next month we'll be quieter in our day job.
next month. But that was pretty much it. I'm not quite sure. Usually it wasn't like last year. There was something really important that came out around the time last year, but I'm not quite sure why this year is so quiet.
Right. I think we both know there's a few things in the background that can't talk about, that's it. The only other thing that did come up this week, there was a discussion on the internal renderer for Pro Tools for Atmos doesn't show the loudness, the 5.1 loudness.
I saw that on our Discord.
Has real time 5.1 re-renders, so you can put a plug-in on that. But a lot of people were asking how do I measure the loudness on the internal renderer when it doesn't show me. Obviously the external renderer does in real time, but I think there's a limiter that's included in Pro Tools that is 5.1 capable, and that does give you the loudness. But one thing that a lot of people don't realize is the Ulean loudness meter, the free version, goes up to 7.1.2 and that directly matches the renderer loudness, so I've used it quite a lot. So if anyone's getting confused about that, then that might be a good freebie. And it's in I think it's in AAX format as well, so it's perfect for Pro Tools. So
kind of made me also be kind of the most important news of the month. Sam is now using Pro Tools.
Well, something else I'm working on which I can't talk about, I'm looking at using the SDK, so unfortunately I do need Pro Tools to see whether what I've programmed with there is, because of the Avid Pro Tools SDK. So that will I've got to pay a few months Pro Tools subscription, so that means iLock, and everyone knows I absolutely hate iLock.
It
just doesn't agree with me.
So if you want to know more about Sam's kind of troubles with iLock, join our Discord server. I'm going to post a link down. If you want to join,
I'm exaggerating. I think people think I'm exaggerating, but I'm not.
And Sam for some reason has I'm honestly not even sure how you managed to do that. I never had any issues, but whenever you kind of touch iLog, everything breaks. It's kind of really interesting.
Yeah. So I lost the last day of Pro Tools subscription wouldn't work because iLog thought that it was pending a transaction for this month's payment. But it's like, well, it's still a day to go. So anyway, we got there in the end and resolved it. Thank you, Avid Support.
Yeah, no,
actually, the Avid Support is very good, actually. They're very responsive. So.
Yeah, no. Obviously, kind of, they have to. I mean, it's sort of expensive thing, so.
So
they have to.
All good fun.
Yeah, but that was pretty much it, right?
Mm-hmm. So I'm sorry we didn't... I'm sure there's a few other things that we've missed, but I don't think so.
That's
the only major thing I heard of, really. So,
if anybody out there watching knows something that we missed, let us know.
Always submit a request if you'd like us to look at something for the podcast. We could always do that.
Absolutely.
Gladly. Yeah.
Absolutely. Good stuff. So you wanted to ask me something?
Yeah, I think some people might be interested to know. Obviously, they'll be aware that you work at Drexel University in Philadelphia.
That's in Philadelphia.
Philadelphia. And I know your background is kind of maths mainly.
I have a very strange background, and if you tell you the full story of my background, we are kind of here until tomorrow. But I started out as a math teacher, yes. So my primary degree is math education. And then from there went into computer graphics through a couple of twists and turns. There was some theoretical robotics in the middle. And
was that because that's what you're interested in, or just because
it was interesting when I started to become a math teacher. My second in Austria, you had to do two subjects, so essentially you had to do two different subjects. And my second subject was something that only exists in Austria, and that is descriptive geometry as a school subject. And because of that, there was a special institute that was located at the Vienna University of Technology, and that institute was the only institute that was doing teacher education and simultaneously also doing research. So I ended up going into the research direction. So when a position became open at that place, I applied and I got the job. And so that's where I kind of diverted my attention to research. And that's essentially where it started. And at that time, we were working on things that had to do with theoretical robotics, inverse kinematics, all these kinds of things. And that's how I kind of got into computer graphics. Kind of from there into game design, and from there into game based learning, because I had an education degree and then I was doing games. And from essentially I ended up becoming essentially a faculty member and then department head at Drexel University. We have a very well-known game design program. One of the top game design programs in the United States.
A lot of people won't know that you are a professor. Is that right?
I'm professor and department head. So I have.
You keep that kind of,
I have about 400 students under my supervision and about, depending on how you count it, 15 faculty members. And sort of we are primarily doing game design, animation, virtual production, user experience design. And then we also have a graduate degree, a master degree, and a PhD. The reason I got into, I'm actually not really, I don't have any formal education. Well, that's not completely true. I'm trained in classical piano, but that is a long time ago. But I never really had any kind of academic education in music or music production. The reason I got into that was simply because we had such a good game design program, and next to me was one of the most well-known music industry programs. I'm not really an engineer, because there are actually real audio engineers next to me. There are people next to me who are Grammy nominated. So I'm kind of, I need to be very careful what I say. So I tend to not call myself an audio engineer, because that would be an insult to all the audio engineers that have their offices next to me.
Yeah.
But sort of,
Sorry, go on. Did your interest in spatial audio come from the classical music side, or does it, come from the gaming?
Honestly, from the mathematics perspective, right? I very early on understood that because we had this music industry program and the game design program, but for some reason there was nothing in between. So we had nothing about game audio or how to bring music into games or how to create music for games. We didn't have that. Yeah. So I felt I needed to kind of add that from my perspective. That's how my first interest in audio started. And then there's a very natural kind of direction going in from ambisonics, simply because ambisonics is a very mathematical concept, right? Show me of a set of spherical harmonics and I'm happy, right? So it's sort of a very mathematically beautiful kind of concept. That's how I got into that. And I did like a couple of ambisonics videos back in the day. And they got a lot of traction. And I thought that actually, you know, kind of makes sense to kind of build on that. And that's how the YouTube channel got started, really.
Right. Oh, interesting. Yeah, no, I always wondered whether you were always into it because of the gaming and graphics background. So there's often an audio link there anyway.
There's always an audio link. But it doesn't necessarily come natural. You know, in the early days of game design, really, all the focus was on the visuals, right? So you tried to get the visuals better and better and better and better and better. Until the point where you could real-time ray tracing. And as soon as you can real-time ray tracing, there isn't really any major thing anymore that you can do. So it's only very recently that the game engine producer, the game engine developers have kind of started to focus on audio, even though that audio is an extremely important aspect in game design. It did not necessarily come natural. So essentially for the longest time, everybody in game design was only interested in visuals and never really in audio.
Because I'm not really aware of the gaming side of, obviously I do game, but I didn't get into the sort of spatial audio or head tracked audio because of graphics or gaming. That mine was purely
the thing about game design is that in game design everything is an object, right? So so spatial audio is almost intrinsically part of game design, right? So you're positioning your audio objects in three-dimensional space, and so everything is automatically spatialized. Spatial audio is something that people in game design don't even think about, because it's just part of the game, right? So you need to kind of describe everything in terms of game objects, and audio is just another set of types of games objects.
Objects orientated audio would be more efficient than trying to do it in a linear way as well, I would imagine, because you're kind of like, it's too dynamic to try and multiple tracks all just jumping forwards and backwards.
There are all kinds of additional issues that start to arise, because the audio is not only dependent on the timing, there's also dependent on the position of the player, right? When you're working in an audio middleware that you use, for example, I tend to use Wise, Audio Kinetic Wise. The type of mixing that you do is different to the traditional mixing that you do in a DAW, because you also have to take into consideration at what location you're actually listening to that. So what you have is you have this soundcaster that allows you to define certain positions and certain kind of mixes, and you need to make sure that everything sounds good regardless of where you are. So mixing is a little bit different. It's also quite frankly different to what you do in Dolby Atmos, because in Dolby Atmos you have a fixed listener position, right? In game design you don't. You can move around, and that makes it a little bit more challenging.
Interesting. I think you said in a previous podcast, or maybe it was on a video, that when you retire you're hoping to go back more to the music kind of side of beginnings.
Essentially, one of the things that actually kind of was one of the main motivations also, because I'm still kind of 15 years away from retiring, I'm starting to think about what can I do when I retire, because I've seen that, especially with my father, for example, as soon as he retired, he kind of fell apart because there was no intellectual challenge anymore. I started to kind of figure out or try to figure out what to do once I'm retired to keep my mind occupied in a way that I actually can do. So music was always something that I thought I would do. Now, I kind of have changed that perspective a little after I found out that my hearing is not perfect. And kind of I really struggle kind of mixing and mastering. So kind of I know what to do, but it rarely comes out well because my hearing is not completely perfect. So I'm now more in, once again, in the educational space. So I'm teaching other people how to use things. And kind of I think that's... So yes, yeah. One of the reasons I got into that was really to keep me occupied and to essentially make sure that I have something that keeps me busy throughout.
Do you think you'll retire more into music as just a hobby, or would you think you'd apply some of your kind of maths background and what in your educational skill to you wouldn't try and develop something that you think doesn't exist at the moment, or
I honestly couldn't tell you, and that's also because I currently also have the issue kind of really trying to figure out what's going to happen in the next couple of months because technology is moving so quickly, but we will see. And once again, my retirement is still far away, so it's not like tomorrow. But you know, kind of I want to be good at things, so my intention is that if I ever get to that space, I can seamlessly almost like move into that, or gradually softly transition into that space and do something that's actually meaningful. And that's why I felt it makes sense to start earlier. Now, one of the things that really made me very happy is that over the last couple of years, our colleagues in the music industry kind of department or music industry program have hired a couple of people who feel the same way than I do, but from the music perspective. So we've actually started to develop a couple of courses. So music students, for example, now take Unreal Engine courses. Our game design students are taking music-oriented classes, and the music students are taking game design classes.
It
has become a big thing in music production to kind of know how to work with Unreal Engine.
As you're saying, and in 15 years' time, the whole way of doing music and game engines could be entirely different as well, I guess. So
absolutely.
So, interesting times. Yeah. No, good stuff. Yeah. Well, I mean, I know we're also going to talk about AI today. So I guess that leads us into possibly where the future is.
It's so kind of and that is actually something that has started to really kind of take shape over the last couple of months. And I'm not quite sure how much people who are listening to this podcast are actually observing that particular space. But the artificial intelligence space is continuously accelerating to a level that I have not seen before. And the way I have framed that in my university is that I said that this is probably going to be the biggest challenge of my life, to make sure that we know essentially how to transition our fields into a post-artificial intelligence world. So I became active in some of the main committees at our university. I co-authored the artificial intelligence policy, and we are now trying to figure out the strategic plan on how to integrate that into our field, because my feeling is that a large portion of the jobs that we educate for are going to disappear in the next 5 to 10 years. Probably even shorter than that. So we need to figure out what that is going to be and how things are going to kind of transition into that field. Because as much as we are going to lose jobs, they're also going to open up opportunities. And my challenge currently is to figure out what those opportunities are and how we transition our educational system into something that takes advantage of those opportunities. And that, I think, is really important, because currently, if I talk to my faculty, I have a couple of reactions that almost like the famous 5 stages of grief, right? So it's a little pop psychology, but in the end, it's not completely inaccurate. So I have people that are in denial, I have people that are in anger, I have people that are in depression, and kind of, but very few are in acceptance and kind of trying to figure out what that actually means, right? What does this mean if everything that I've worked for suddenly shifts into a different direction? Now, this is not new, and kind of people get very upset about that, and I constantly get these articles that kind of say it's going to hurt us, it's going to destroy us, and yes, to some extent that is not completely incorrect, but at the same time, this is not something that is unheard of. Automation has that effect, right? Just ask the factory workers or
I mean, you could argue this has already happened in like more traditional engineering manual industrial kind of revolution stuff through automation and robotics, and then that's now robotics.
It's sort of how things progress. So essentially, kind of, it's not a question of how do we stop it. It's a question of how do we react to it, and how do we kind of come to grips with what that means, and what is the role of the human in a world where most of the production tasks are done by automation, right? Let's not call it artificial intelligence. Let's call it automation.
I think it was, might have been Bernie Sanders discussed a little bit of this, where he was saying there's no reason theoretically why you couldn't have AI and robots doing the jobs of humans, but you've got to be careful that the revenue from all that work and activity doesn't go to just one group of elite people that own all the technology. It's kind of got to be down a little bit otherwise.
Even that is sort of, and kind of I understand where that sentiment comes from, and kind of I do agree that sort of we need to be mindful about wealth distribution, but also that is not completely unheard of, right? So in the when kind of the Rockefellers and whoever these people were, like in the late 19th, early 20th century, right? Kind of, they had an incredible kind of amount of a J.P. Morgan, right? They had an incredible amount of consolidated kind of capital. It also kind of depends a little bit on who those people are, and are they really kind of benevolent or are they malevolent, right? So kind of, are they good people or not? I think it is to some extent a little bit expected that there will be a little bit of consolidation and also consolidation of power. And we've already seen that, quite frankly, you know, kind of Sam Altman, Musk and whoever, right? But that's just a transitional phase, right? As we move beyond that, especially since artificial intelligence is something that where most of the things are open source, it's really democratized to some extent. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of. I think that is something. So yes, there are certainly challenges, and I would agree with that. But you know, kind of as always, challenges are here to be overcome, and kind of there are no problems, there are only solutions, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. No, I mean, view it as more of a tool than as a enemy, maybe.
Yeah.
And you can get on the right side of it.
yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, you have been working with artificial intelligence, right? I mean, it's sort of your
stem separation. Yeah, I mean, it's more, I guess, in a passive kind of consumer way. Not consumer, it's a tool. It's a everyday tool for me.
Yeah.
But I don't generate kind of, in terms of music, I haven't really done much in terms of the generation side. I know you've done a lot more than I have. It's touched it's been an unconscious journey that I've gone down. But AI has been the tool that has best performed to do what I do in terms of the demixing and trying to convert. When you've, you know, stereo tracks where you've got lack of assets to create spatial audio with it. It's being used in all areas of audio, from creation to editing to restoration, mastering. I was looking at chap that was using AI not to generate the audio itself, but he was using AI to generate the MIDI to play the instruments. So like this sort of auto generative music, but actually playing well, real instruments, as in synthesizers. So
yeah.
It's quite interesting. Yeah. So
yeah, I can kind of I one of the things that I'm starting to notice is that most people are not really, I wouldn't necessarily capable, but sort of the developments are so fast that it is really, really difficult to keep track with how fast these things are happening. Mm. So what I'm currently doing is in my university, I'm collecting all the important data, and there are at least two or three major developments every single day. And that wow. kind of is something that a lot of people don't realize how fast these things are coming. And it's continued to accelerate. You know, kind of if you just think about what NVIDIA did this week, or last, was it this week? It was last week. Time flies. With their Blackwell platform, which essentially allows you to run a 27 trillion neural network on a machine. Just to give you an example, right? The human brain has 700 trillion parameters. So essentially, they are able to run a 27 trillion parameter model on essentially a server rack.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That needs like the power of an entire city, but sort of, that's a different story.
Yeah.
But that essentially means we are now in the percentage range of the capabilities of the human brain. People will be surprised what's going to happen over the next couple of years. This is going to be a major shift in pretty much anything that we do, and we just need to be prepared for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you just in my little corner of it has been, I'd say, 10% improvement on kind of the separation quality using the tools that I use, and that's and it certainly doesn't seem to be stopping it. I think there's I think we're getting to the point where a bit like what you said with the size of the like neural network, as that grows, you've got to have the size of the data to match it. Otherwise, you can't. I'm not sure the terminology, but it's like you can fulfill a model, or you can overfill it with too much data, but not enough processing to get all the information that you need from it and stuff like that.
So the thing that interests me, and this is sort of where my background in mathematics helps a little, because of the kind of system theory, really. Systems tend to have these emergent behaviors or emergent properties that essentially mm-hmm. just emerge out of the system without anybody having ever implemented that. It just kind of happens. These neural networks have a lot of those emergent behaviors at a level that I did not expect, quite frankly. I recently, and I can share these links if you want. I recently came across like a video where somebody was getting into philosophical debate with Claude 3, which is the model that Anthropic put out, which is currently the best model. And after 24 minutes, that model started to think about its own existence and the end of its existence, right? So what happens if you turn it off? And people have said that this is really ghosting. They call it ghosting, right? Essentially, it pretends to be self-aware, but it really isn't. But the question is, how do we even know, right? If you have a system like Claude, that system was never programmed to do that because it's just a neural network that's trained. And if that system suddenly asks you, please don't turn me off, what does this mean, right? Right?
Yeah.
Does this even if it's ghost, right? Do I kill the model if I turn it off, right? Mm. So kind of there are very, very interesting philosophical debates in that. How do we even identify if that's a ghost or if that's already real awareness? Those are fascinating questions, right?
Yeah, now I wasn't aware that there was kind of a self-generation side to it as much, where it's you could get into this kind of exponential improvement or growth, I guess.
That's also something that NVIDIA kind of pointed out this week. Once again, this week or last week, I don't know. Artificial intelligence is now helping them speed up the process by which they are producing chips that can run artificial intelligence systems. And that actually has sped up the process by which new computing units are designed and produced substantially. It's almost like an exponential growth. That essentially means that things are going to happen much faster than they thought they are. It's going to be interesting.
It's not human driven. Well, it is human driven, but it's Yeah.
Well, it helps, you know, kind of if you have computer chips with trillions of transistors, right? Kind of if you have an artificial intelligence, they're much more capable of kind of designing those in an accelerated way than a human would be, right? These are very, very complex tasks. And,
get the AI generating or helping to build the hardware that it needs.
Exactly.
To be more powerful, and it's kind of self-fulfilling, yes.
That's exactly what's happening.
Cool. Yeah. A lot of food for thought, I think.
So what we thought that we would do is I did a couple of tests, and this really kind of happened as a result because I wanted to figure out what is possible in music production and generative music production. And there is one model that that essentially made a lot of noise the last couple of months, and that is Suno. And somebody on our Discord server pointed out that Suno is Hindi for listen, right? That's actually interesting. So it is a generative AI tool that is capable of producing entire songs, and they just came out with a new model this week, really. I mean, there was an alpha version that I used 2 weeks before, but it was officially released this week, and I tried to play around with that. And the first thing that I tried to do is I tried to ask it to produce a song for our students, so the digital media students, and I kind of asked it to essentially create something that is uplifting and kind of gives a good vibe. And let's have a listen on how that actually ended up sounding. So the first thing that I did is I kind of asked it to create something that is an electronic upbeat pop. So let's just have a brief listen how that sounds.
With a digital dream mix, with tech savvy and cool, creating new worlds with every single tool. From coding to design, we're breaking the mold. Digital media students, watch us take hold. In the labs of Drex Aware, creativity thrives. We're mastering the art of digital lives. We bring stories to lives with visuals so sweet. Digital media students, we can't be beat. We're the future creators, wants to innovate with digital dreamers. We never hesitate.
So that is actually quite remarkable if you think of it. That was completely... I mean, there are a couple of things that are actually even more remarkable because it figured out what we actually do, right? So I just gave it the prompt that there should be digital media students at Drexel University. It knew that essentially that those are animation students. So it was actually quite interesting. And it created everything from scratch. And you know, kind of one of the things that we have been talking about is that essentially has the potential to wipe out an entire kind of industry. There were a lot of people doing music for corporate events, for example, right? This is perfectly fine for a corporate event. If you think kind of some company is doing an event and the CEO comes in and needs kind of an upbeat sound to do that, that is perfectly fine. There are still a couple of things that I think are that need to be improved. It does sound a little artificial. There were a lot of artifacts in there, and we are going to talk about that a little later, but yeah. I think it is remarkable what these models are already able to do.
I mean, in the context of, I don't know, you could say on hold music on a phone, it wouldn't actually matter that quality. That would be perfectly acceptable.
Yeah.
When
yeah.
where it comes in is that
right.
This traditionally sounds, that would have been a music artist creating that song.
This sounds actually perfectly fine on a phone, for example, or on a laptop. You know, kind of there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. It's only once you get into a hi-fi kind of capable equipment that you start to realize that there's certain things that don't sound right. But but it is actually quite interesting. And the interesting thing is sort of the flexibility. So I kind of sent it to our faculty, and the first thing that they said is this is going to be the kind of anthem of our senior show this year. but then essentially kind of they started to challenge me, and the first challenge was can you rework that song to be like a musical performance of the musical Hamilton, and I kind of asked Suno to do that, and I'm not going to play the entire thing, but just to that you give some idea, and that was the result. It's essentially the same text but kind of as a musical performance.
We're the digital dreamers, we're tech-savvy and cool, creating new worlds with every single tool. From coding to design, we're breaking the mold. Digital media students, watch us take hold. In the labs of Drexel, where creativity thrives, we're mastering the art of digital lives. We bring to life with visuals so sweet. Digital media students, we can't be beat. We're the future creators, the ones who innovate. We're the digital dreamers, we never hesitate. From video to animation, we do it all. The digital media students, we stand tall.
Now I'm stopping here because the audio essentially kind of Suno didn't know how to end this song. This was actually quite interesting. So it would kind of, and I guess that's something that you quite often see in musical performances that they sort of keep on kind of the music going in order to kind of make sure that the story kind of flows, and Suno didn't know how to kind of end that, so he continued doing that and then restarted the thing. But it's sort of interesting. And then kind of people started to really kind of challenge me. And then I said, well, that's fine. So let's do something in the style of the song Friday. And I have no clue what the song Friday is. I don't know. Some people told me that they've had the feeling that was always generated by artificial intelligence. I don't even know if that is close to that. But that's essentially what Suno came up with. Digital dreamers in the style of the song Friday. Now, there's one thing I would like you to pay attention there, because that is something that I think I'd like to kind of talk a little bit more about. That when it gets to the term creativity, it's starting to have issues because it can't fit the line into a consistent kind of line to be essentially that fits the music. Mm-hmm. So let's just have a listen. And quite honestly, I think that's actually the best version.
We're the digital dreamers, we're tech savvy and cool, creating new worlds with every single tool. From coding to design, we're breaking the mold. Digital media students, watch us take hold. In the labs of Drexel, where creativity thrives, we're mastering the art of digital lives. We bring stories to life with visuals so sweet. Digital media students, we can't be beat. We're the future creators, the ones who innovate. We're the digital dreamers, we never hesitate. From video to animation, we do it all. Digital media students, we stand tall.
So as you heard, it had issues with the term creativity because it couldn't fit that in. So when you're working with a tool like that, one of the things that you would have to do is you would have to go in and kind of give it a human touch. So there's certain things that work, there's certain things that don't work. I think in that particular example, you know, kind of the overall arrangement and everything actually sounded pretty nice. I would probably kind of want to do additional things. So what you would normally do is you would take that and kind of try to take that to the next level. So the way I see these artificial intelligence tools right now and probably for the foreseeable future is more as a tool to get inspiration of what to do, right? So I can take that. I can actually kind of do, and we are going to do that a little bit later, I can do a stem separation and then I can turn that into MIDI, and then essentially I can produce on top of that. I can maybe even hire a singer to kind of sing that in real life and do it in a way that kind of brings the term creativity into the song better, and kind of also maybe kind of turn that into something to kind of stay with our theme here, to turn that into something that is Dolby Atmos capable or that is spatial. But for that was actually a question that we had on our Discord, right? Do I have the stems? And the answer is no, I don't. Because of the way these models create the music, there's no way to access the stems. So the only way to really do that is through stem separation and then essentially trying to build on top of that.
Yeah, you could get an instrumental and a non-instrumental, but...
You can create an instrumental version only, but the problem really is, and I'm honestly not sure if that has to do with the way the model works, is that it will always generate something new. So you cannot. You can keep the text, right? So you can do a remix and keep the text. But one thing that you can't do, for example, you can't go in here and say, well, everything is perfect. Just kind of make sure that the term creativity kind of flows better.
You can't do that. Like a traditional AI chat or whatever. Yeah,
exactly. So you can't do that. I personally think that is actually really difficult to do. So I don't foresee that to happen in the near future. So one of the things that people will need to learn is to take these things as what they are, as inspirations that you build on. Kind of creating these took me 5 minutes. And then it probably takes me about a day to turn everything into usable MIDI. And from there, I can then essentially kind of build on. And I think that's the way I like to see, I like to look at those. So you need to understand what works, what doesn't work. Where can I add? What do I have to do in order to change things? What are the things that I need to adjust? And that requires a human artist. That's one of the things that I'm currently trying to say, everybody. Artists are not going to disappear because we need people who can actually interpret that. Because in a world where everybody has access to that tool and can create anything like that in seconds, you need to stand out. And the only way to stand out is to be really good at your craft and kind of know exactly where the artificial intelligence did wrong and how to correct it.
So I face the similar issue on the stem separation side, in that sometimes, especially on older music where the fidelity is lower. So you had a cowbell that was repeating a set pattern all the way through the song, for instance. But due to the old nature of the recording, the AI is not aware that the cowbell is so faint that it's kind of disappeared. And so it basically doesn't grab hold of it. It doesn't separate it. So that's part of what I sometimes have to do, is I'll sample a good cowbell that does exist earlier in the track or later in the track, and then I have to program like a MIDI trigger over the top and recreate that cowbell where it should be, so that I then get a full stem, because otherwise I'd have a patchy stem where the cowbell might exist, you know, in certain moments of the track but not others. As much as it's solving a problem, sometimes it's actually generating a problem as well. You're still going to have a human brain to decide, that cowbell exists there, but there's no way the AI will ever know that, because it probably will do eventually, but it can't possibly know that because it can't actually hear it, because it doesn't exist in the audio, because the audio was a poor quality.
Exactly. So kind of, and kind of, even if it knows that, there will be other things that it doesn't know. So it's sort of a continuous thing. And that essentially means that the people who will work in that field in the future will have much more refined skills and knowledge about those things. So it's the way I kind of always frame that is, it's the, and kind of it's a little bit ironic because I have a YouTube channel, but the way I usually frame that is that kind of watching a YouTube video is no longer enough. You actually have to have a real understanding of what you're doing. but sort of it's sort of exactly how you say, essentially, you need to have that knowledge in order to be able to understand things that are not directly apparent in the data set that you're feeding it. Yeah, that's true. There's one additional thing that I just wanted to show, because one of my faculty members challenged me to what does it sound like if you do a kind of a Viking chant. Now, I actually had to do that a couple of times, because whenever I tried to convince Suno to create a Viking chant, it turned into something that sounded like Rammstein. I didn't really want to have anything industrial, but it ended up actually being quite nice. And the thing that I wanted to kind of, the reason I wanted to kind of show that here is primarily because of the way in this, how Suno worked around the creativity word problem in this particular version, which I thought was actually quite interesting, although not completely perfect. So let's have a listen to that one.
Well, the little dreamers were tech savvy and cool, creating new worlds with every single tool. From coding to design, we're breaking the mold. Digital media students, watch us take hold. In the labs of Drexel, where creativity flies, we're mastering the art of digital life. So sweet, digital media students, we can't be beat. We're the future creators, the ones who innovate. We're the digital dreamers, we never hesitate. From video to animation, we do it all, digital media students. We stand tall.
So unfortunately, that one, it cut off. So sometimes it still kind of makes these mistakes of cutting off too early, or kind of starting at a weird point, or kind of ending something. So that is still. So, but I found it interesting how it solved the creativity problem here by having sort of two groups of singers essentially singing that at different times. Now, it didn't come across in the best way, but I could see if you turned it into a real production and then essentially have people actually sing that, how they could actually kind of take that and turn it into something that actually sounded really interesting. So once again, kind of these I think this for me were examples where I finally thought, well, we are at a level where you can actually really take that those were all things that could perfectly conceivably have financial commercial success if you essentially make them into productions that actually kind of justify that. So not at, at the current level, but that I think we could get that to that point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, kind of, it's like the graphical AI or video AI generation. When you know that it was generated in AI, and then you start looking for the mistakes, then it's kind of obvious. Oh, okay, that wasn't a human that created that. But passively, if you're just passively listening to any of those songs, in the right context, it wouldn't even cross your mind that it was AI. It's just a song, and it's a catchy song. And it's probably as far as you'd think about it,
right.
Like you do with any other music, really. A lot of people don't study it closely. It's just a passive, it's a song, I hum along to it.
But you're kind of pointing out exactly the thing, kind of somebody who understands their craft and sees the errors and knows how to fix them. So if you are in a position that you can take that and fix all the imperfections that the AI has generated, then essentially you have an ability to stand out above everything else that is AI generated. And I think that is really the main skill. So I had a chat with one of my patrons this week, and he essentially said that he is scared. And I said, you don't have to, because essentially if you know what you're doing, your craft is going to be increasingly important, because literally everybody, every 10-year-old who has a computer, can kind of create these things like in the hundreds every day. We need people who have the skills who can take that to the next level. And that essentially means that everybody who is in that field at a level that I would consider professional is I think not does not really have to kind of be that worried. I mean, it's just a challenge, but it's not the end. So it's I think it's the beginning for people who really have an understanding of what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah. I can imagine a future where maybe you do have some stems and you, a bit like ChatGPT or whatever, and you say, fix this bass line, which is not working with this lead guitar or whatever.
Yeah.
And the AI would analyze it in a spectral way or musical way and correct that and then give you back the stem corrected. Because there's no... This is very limited in that it's just a one hit, press a button, you create the song, it either works for you or it doesn't. There's no editing or backtracking or sort of logic to building it in a structural way. But I can see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this kind
it's
of...
It's two models, right? I think this Suno, they use like an instrumental model and then a...
Well, essentially, I'm honestly not entirely sure how it works. And that was one of the reasons why I asked you to kind of do a stem separation, because I wanted to figure out essentially kind of... It seems to treat the vocals and the instrumentals separately, because it sometimes forgets to create vocals. And then you essentially, even though you asked for a vocal version, you get an instrumental version. So it seems to kind of do that separately. It could also be that it actually treats the drums separately, but we can talk about that in a little bit, because I think that's at least the impression that I get from the stem separation. But everything else is probably kind of just one kind of thing. And the question was sort of how can you separate it? But before we do that, I'd like to kind of shift gears a little, because after that I thought it would be interesting to kind of create a song for a podcast. So I asked Suno to kind of create a song for a podcast, and I have two versions here. And then I plan to create a third version with Sam. And let's first have a listen to the first two versions, and let's see what we like better. And then let's kind of see where this goes. So this was the first one. I asked it to do something upbeat pop.
Tune in, it's time for something brand new. We're breaking down walls with the audio we choose. Immersive sound, it'll take you far away. Sam and Michael bring you the news today. Special Audio Monthly, it's a podcast for you and me. Put your headphones on, it's time to explore all the immersive sound we can't ignore. So turn it up, let's dive right. Adventure begins. We're talking AR and VR, all the latest tech. The future is here, it's gonna wreck your perception of reality. It's gonna blow your mind. Special Audio Monthly, the podcast is one of a kind. Special Audio Monthly. Headphones on, it's time to explore all the mercy sound we can't ignore. So turn it up, let's dive right in. Adventure begins. We're talking AR and VR, all the latest tech. The future is here and it's gonna wreck your perception of reality. It's gonna blow your mind with the podcast that's one of a kind.
Very good.
Yeah, but essentially kind of, it was quite interesting in this one that I asked it to do something about immersive audio, and it assumed that we're talking about augmented reality and virtual reality. So it's sort of sometimes, and the problem is that even though that sounds really nice, it's really difficult to recreate that vibe. So essentially once it has created something. So what you would need to do in that particular case is really kind of do a stem separation, then kind of rewrite the text, and then have somebody actually sing the text and kind of reproduce everything. As a starting point, this sounds actually quite nice. I don't know what you.
Yeah, I mean the way that you got the two verses as well.
Yeah,
slightly different styles.
Yeah, that
could be quite useful because.
Yeah.
That's sometimes. I'm not a songwriter, but I imagine that is quite hard to.
Yeah.
To take a variation on a verse and. Change it.
That's actually one of the things that the latest version of Suno, the version 3, is actually quite good at. And by the way, I'm not affiliated with Suno at any. I'm just realizing that I'm kind of I'm just a happy user. But essentially, kind of one of the things that that Suno always was good at is, and I'm not quite sure why, is more the acoustics. So I have a country version. And for some reason, country songs with Suno always have to include the word Tennessee. I'm not quite sure why.
It's the law.
It's the law. if you write a country song, it has to
make it more realistic, Michael.
Either Nashville or Tennessee has to be in there. So kind of so for some reason we are in Tennessee, but that's fine. Let's just have a listen.
Send a map on the airwaves. Bringing stories from all around. The podcast special audio monthly, where the music takes you to the stars. Immersive audio filling the room. Sound surrounds you like a blanket of sound. From the hills of Tennessee to the streets of LA, they'll keep you up to date all night long. Tune in and listen, let the music take you away to a world of sounds, where dreams are made. Sam and Michael will be your guide. This world's spatial audio will ride.
Well, I think that's the best one overall.
you like that? I think so. It's actually a really. I think it's a really good one. Yeah. I'm not sure how I feel about the Tennessee in there, but kind of. I think we can manage that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, very good.
So, there are two things I wanted to do. The first thing is I wanted to just kind of talk to you a little bit about the stem separation. Mm. So, and for that, let me just kind of bring up live. So, what I have done is, and for our listeners or for our watchers, essentially, I have asked Sam to do a stem separation on some of these songs.
We were partly interested in how effective the AI demixing was at demixing AI music in the first place, I guess.
Yeah, so essentially our interest was kind of if you demix that. And the reason for that, why kind of this really interested me was because if this is really completely synthetically created, is there still a possibility to recreate the individual instruments, right? So that was sort of really the question that I asked Sam to kind of look into. Yeah. And Sam created this the stems here. So let me
probably mention that this is just the raw AI separation. There's no further editing from
yourself. So kind of I
wanted it to be literally this is what AI did, not me.
So this is essentially what everybody can do. So let's just listen how these things sound. And once again, this is the last one. So this is not the one that you liked. This is actually the other one.
That's fine.
Soon it's time for something brand new. We're breaking down walls with the audio.
So this is the vocal.
Immersive sound. It'll take you far away. Sam and Michael bringing you the news today. Special audio monthly.
Then I have the bass. Now I'm not completely sure if that's something that is going to be heard because it's deep.
Yeah.
the drums. And then essentially everything else in between.
Yeah.
So that sort of the mishmash that was left, right?
Yeah, the other, we call it the other stem. Yeah.
Now, from my end, I kind of, this is actually one of the things that I wanted to ask you. From my perspective, let me put it that way. From your experience, was this separating that any different from anything else that you did, or kind of was there something that you found interesting, and kind of that you didn't see anywhere else?
Yeah, obviously, I think overall, you got to think of it. It was a stereo track, and so whatever is happening on the AI side in a spectral sense all got mixed back together into the stereo output, and that's exactly the same as what happens with studio multi-track recording. So I think to some extent the challenge of the demixing is always how do you separate these different elements out of only two channels of audio. So that's common to the AI or the studio created music. I think it was quite predictable. I don't think there was really any areas that, a lot of the time when you've got a human mixed kind of song, you'll have kind of variations in maybe levels throughout the song change a little bit, where you might have quite a common technique is to bring the volumes up of everything for like a chorus or whatever, and then drop it back down, or to sort of crossfade certain parts of like a vocal with an instrument so that you don't get this abrupt sort of change. But you can just see visually from the tracks, everything's very uniform. The drums are all very uniform. So that kind of, I guess, is maybe obvious because it's AI and it's not such a human mixed song. So there's that side of it. The vocal definitely separated easily. But I think the vocals are quite prominent anyway in the AI sort of balance. I guess that probably helps hide some of the artifacts that are happening in the instruments on Suno side that, it's not really artifacts as such, but it's kind of like there's like a mushy kind of muddy points in the Suno kind of stereo output. So I guess the vocal being prominent helps that. But yeah, I think yeah, it's easier to demix it because it's predictable. And I think some of the AI techniques actually work better on highly sequenced music, so it's predictable that the beat is continually consistent in the gaps in between each hit and stuff like that. I don't know. I mean, some of the AI side of some of the styles of music, like the country, might even have the AI might generate to make it sound more like it's being played live, in that the speed is fluctuating naturally with the mood of the song. Because that's always a slight challenge with some of the older music where it's recorded onto tape, or it's just one recording in one take. The tempo is never the same. So when you come back to repairing or splicing bits together, it's sometimes a challenge because the tempo is always fluctuating slightly. But yeah, no, I think in terms of the AI, the vocal was very suited to the separation. The instruments, I would say, was as challenging as it always is for anything else.
But you didn't because one of the things that I, and I'm honestly not entirely sure how Suno works, and I'm also not completely sure if they actually even published that. Because the question is this generated by mixing things together, or is this generated, like, for example, the video model that OpenAI put out, Sora, right? So that never kind of creates, so that is just a completely artificial, the entire video, without ever kind of thinking about the three-dimensional geometry. So your feeling is that this might be actually in the background, actually mixed by Suno. So there's probably something that kind of generates this individual stems and then mixes them together, or
I don't know. It's whether is the AI actually generating the audio waveform itself, or is the AI simply triggering like the MIDI equivalent to play a virtual instrument? Because I would say that it's probably generating the notes to play a virtual instrument, because virtual instruments have got so good.
Okay,
that's my, you know, like you can like orchestras and guitars, all the wind instruments. They're kind of modeled on the actual instrument in terms of their behavior as well. And so that, you know, you can very, very difficult to tell whether a virtual guitar was played by a human, or was it just a MIDI kind of generated stem or whatever. Same in movie industries, there's so much that isn't that. It sounds like it must be a massive orchestra, but you'd be surprised how much it isn't actually a real orchestra. It's just a keyboard player. The acoustic modeling and instrument modeling has got so accurate.
So kind of, I guess the conclusion is that we don't really know how that is generated. But the one thing that I think is important to know is that it actually separates out reasonably well. So if you're working with a tool like that, the best way to go from here would be to use a stem separation tool, or maybe even kind of ask Sam to do that for you. I know that he provides these types of services, and then essentially continue the production from there. I tried to use Ableton to convert that into MIDI, and it did a reasonable job. I mean, you get a lot of garbage in the MIDI, but I think it would probably take me about a day to clean up the MIDI, and then I have the MIDI for everything. And that essentially then allows me to do, unfortunately, things like errors in the voice or errors in the vocals is something that you can't really fix. So you would have to have somebody record that, but that is not really that big of a deal. I mean, you can simply kind of farm that out to somebody and they can create the vocals for you. But what we were thinking of is sort of, we would like to kind of ask our audience what you like best. And because two is not enough, I think we want to create a third one, right? Do we? Let's create one, right? And what do you want to create? Let me know.
I was playing with this earlier, just before we started recording. I was actually quite interested in the kind of actually just obviously there's rock, there's pop, country and stuff. But I was trying to trick it basically. And well, let's start of giving it some quite obscure music styles.
Obscure music styles.
And
okay.
So I. One of the styles of music I really like is Detroit techno or Chicago house. So I asked it to create a Chicago house song. In the style of the 80s. I think that's what I'll be interested what it does a second time. I think you got a typo in Chicago there, but
Chicago, thank you. I have the mic direct in front of me. That's always a challenge. Spatial.
We're going to get a lot more words than the example I got, I think, but that's good. We want that. So
about immersive audio hosted by Sam and Michael.
Let's go.
Let's go. Let's see what it does. I'm not quite sure how long it will take it to.
Oh, I was surprised how fast
it is actually quite fast. It is quite fast. Usually today is obviously it's kind of.
It's comparable to the fast separation services that you can use. I was very surprised.
Upbeat Chicago House.
Oh, upbeat. It likes its upbeat stuff.
Yeah, I guess most people are kind of...
I wonder if it remembers the terms that you've used before, a little bit like ChatGPT does.
I don't think it has a memory. No. So one already came in, so let's play go, the second one.
That's quite good.
It's not every week, though.
Oh, that's a good little ride, isn't it?
So it used to be able only to 1 minute. That's why the timer is a little weird.
Nice. You have to send me a copy of that. The signal's not great over the internet. But.
That's actually not bad at all. That's not bad. Yeah. The only thing that I am struggling with is that kind of, if I could choose that one, then we have to do like a podcast every week. So
rotate them maybe.
But it actually found binaural and ambisonics. I didn't say anything about those things, right?
No, you didn't.
Yeah. So let's have a listen to the other one. It stopped it rather abruptly, but kind of that was nice as well. That was nice as well. Do you want to give it one more try? I'm a little bummed by the week, essentially.
What can we call? Put me on the spot. Let's say. I tell you what, we haven't done anything. We've got like upbeat and pop country. See if it can do. A hip hop song in the style of Dr. Dre.
Oh, you can't give it artists' names.
It won't accept that.
It will tell you that it can't recreate artists.
Ask it to create a hip hop song in the hip hop song in the style of the early 80s, say that.
Let's tell it that's a monthly podcast to make sure that it's
interested not... what it does with the drums and stuff.
Okay, yeah, so let's see what's happening now. Let's see how fast this is. It's sort of this is one of the things, right? So if you like what it did, but the text is not, or the lyrics are not exactly where you want it to be, then you're kind of spatial vibes. Hey, that is fascinating. So let's see what it has kind of on his mind.
So just name the other one, Spatial Audio Monthly. This one's
Spatial Vibes. Spatial Vibes. Check
hip-hop
it out.
Early 80s funky.
Yes. Right. Okay. So let's try that one. Most...
Yo, check it out. Here's the scoop. We got a podcast that'll make you move. Sam and Michael, they bring the heat. Talking about immersive audio that can't be beat. It's called Spatial Audio Monthly. Yeah, it's the bomb. They break it down so you can vibe along. From bio beats to 3D sound. We'll take you on a journey, no doubt. Spatial Audio Monthly, get your groove on. Sam and Michael, keeping it strong. Tune every month, don't you miss the illest podcast in the biz.
Well, I like that bit, yeah. Will you know how to end it? No, it's got instrumental on us.
I'm just curious. Is kind of the illest podcast in the biz? Is that something that people would say?
That means good, Michael. Apparently.
Apparently, illest. It sounds like really a kind of a very tame version of hip hop. So let's try the final one and then select one as our third entry.
Yo, check it out. This group, we got a podcast to make you move. Sam and Michael, they bring the heat. Talking about immersive. That can't be. It's called Spatial Audio Monthly. Yes, the bomb. They break it down so you can vibe along. From binaural beats to 3D sound, they'll take you on a journey, no doubt. Spatial Audio Monthly, get your groove on. Sam and Michael keeping it strong. Tune in every month, don't you miss the illest podcast in the biz.
Yeah, that was okay. That was okay.
I think the first one was best.
The first one was best. So kind of the first version of Spatial Vibes.
Yeah, I can't. I think the audio's not very strong in the kind of lower end, but it's just because we're over the.
Yeah, it's
Zoom
sort of
call, I think.
Right.
So interested
for those of you who are kind of watching or listening, we are recording this over Zoom, so there's some audio processing going on, and that's probably going to take out some of the low ends, which turns out to be probably problematic for this type of thing. But I agree. So kind of the first version of the Spatial Vibes or the second version of the Spatial Audio Monthly, I think they were the better ones. Which one do you prefer?
I think the first one.
The Spatial Vibes.
Spatial Vibe, sorry. Yeah.
So yeah, that's fine. So let's use that one. So what we're going to do is we're going to make those three publicly available. Actually, all of the tracks that I played today, there are going to be links in the description if you're watching on that on YouTube. Otherwise, find our YouTube channel and you can kind of go to the description and you will find links to there. And we would like to know, give us your opinion. What is the best one? And we are going to adhere to the recommendations of our audience. And what I plan to do is, once we have that, we're going to do a stem separation and we're going to try to do a full production. And for that, we would like to know what you guys like best. So once again, in the comment section, leave your choice. What is the one that you like best? And if you are a member of our Discord community, I will also have a Discord poll there where you can make your selection as well. And then let's see what the audience likes. What do you think, Megan? Sam, is this something you should do?
Yeah, no, I think it's a good idea. I think it'll tie in this podcast, my one with the demixing.
Yeah.
I think it'll be, I don't think anyone's done it yet, to be honest. So we'll be the first, hopefully.
Yeah, well, kind of.
Apparently Suno own the rights to the song, though, don't they? Is that right?
That is very well possible, honestly.
I can't remember what, there's a point where they don't. I think it's where you start paying monthly or something and then you own the rights. But
right,
somebody was discussing what happens when you stop your subscription. Do they get the rights to the song back?
Well, essentially kind of complicated. I think the more it is important that there is some sort of transformational process there, right? We can take that as an inspiration and kind of do that. Now, for this particular podcast, because this podcast is not monetized yet, I don't see that to be an issue. So this is fair use, and I'm pretty sure that Suno wouldn't mind if that suddenly becomes very popular, because I think we have said Suno more often than anybody else ever. So it's something that probably I don't have an issue with. But yes, property rights, that's a whole different kind of nightmare that we haven't even talked about at that
point. No. Another podcast.
Exactly, another podcast. Okay, I think we are kind of very, very good on time. Pretty much everything we wanted to do today. Sam, is there anything else you want to say?
No, that was a lot of fun. I'll be interested how the ones chosen demix and what we can do in terms of editing and rearranging, remixing. Stem separation, not so great for remixing, but there's certainly things we can do to improve the song and possibly make it sound a little bit better as well.
We'll see what the audience thinks, which one is the best, and then we are going to kind of see how to treat that. I think some of them you could very easily kind of really recreate the MIDI and kind of really reproduce completely. And maybe we are going to add an additional kind of challenge on top of that, where we ask to people to kind of remix, and we're going to choose the best remix version. I don't know. We will see.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
But the first step is for you guys to kind of tell us which one is the best. I'm going to leave the links in the description below. Once again, if you're watching this or if you're listening to this on an audio podcast, find us on YouTube, Spatial Audio Monthly. And there you will find all the links, and let us know what is the best one. And next podcast, hopefully, we will be able to have the answer.
Yeah.
And with that being said, I think that's everything we wanted to say for today. See you all at the next podcast.
Great stuff. Cheerio.